So today I'd like to talk about the origins of the minhag of kitniyos, and then hopefully make our way to how it relates to the question that's come up a few years ago, but I think at this point it's basically been resolved in terms of quinoa on Pesach. So I have basically an outline that we'll try to go through here. It's not that long. And let's just start from the beginning. So the beginning is that kitniyos is not something that the Torah says you can't eat on Pesach. It's not something that the Gemara says you can't eat on Pesach. To the contrary, the Gemara basically makes it very clear in the Rambam that kitniyos, we'll have to explain what kitniyos are, we'll get to that. But whatever this kitniyos thing is actually permitted to eat on Pesach. So what happened? So we have to understand what happened, why did it happen, when did it happen, and what are the ramifications of that. So the first source is a Gemara in Psachim, which I don't have here. The Gemara says that there are certain ways, in order to make matzah, let me grab my sources. In order to make matzah, you can't just make matzah out of anything you want. You have to use the 5 grains to make matzah. Okay? And it's the same 5 grains that can turn into chametz are the same ones that we use to make matzah. That's why making matzah is such a touch-and-go thing. Because it's the same thing that if you let them stay, it's the same flour, right? That if you let it rise too long, it will turn into chametz. That's exactly what we use in order to make matzah. So what can you use? So the Gemara says you can use in order to make for your matzah on Pesach chitin, seorin, kusmin, shifon, ushibol, ushul. These are what we refer to as the 5 grains. And the Gemara says, and we'll explain what some of these are in a second. The Gemara says, hani in, only these. Orez v'dochen lo. Orez, rice. Right? You can't use rice, mash it up and make it into a matzah and use it at the Seder. You can't use that. And how do we know this? So the Gemara has a drasha. How do we know that only something that could potentially become chametz, devarim habarim lidei chimutz adam yotzu b'am yidei chavoso b'matzah, yotzu elu, when it comes to these other items, rice can't really rise and turn into bread, the Gemara is assuming. So something that can't potentially turn into bread, you can't use to make matzah either. It only turns into sirchon, and sirchon means it gets sour. It spoils. If you mix it and you leave it out, as opposed to the wheat and the barley, if you put them with the water and you let it rises, and it can turn into bread. When it comes to orez, when it comes to rice, if you put water in it and you let it stay out, it'll just spoil. And the Gemara says, our mission is against Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, because he says that orez is in the category of a grain, and that you could turn into chametz. Okay? So we have an opinion over here. We have an opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says that orez can turn into chametz, but we don't hold that way. That's what the Gemara says. And if you look on the sheet, I have basically the English translation of the Rambam. The Rambam says the prohibition of chametz on Pesach only applies to the 5 types of grain. What are they? He categorizes them as basically the wheats, which are wheat and spelt, and then types of barleys, which are barley, oats, and rye. But kitniyos, such as rice, millet, beans, lentils, and the like, are not subject to the prohibition of chametz. And even if a person would need rice flour, even with boiling water, and you covered it, and you would expect it to rise, and that would not be considered chametz, only considered sirchon, decay, and you would not violate anything. Okay? So, just to point out, parenthetically, there's a whole discussion about oats, whether the word shibol eshual of the 5 minim, whether that refers to oats or something else, and many of the translations, it says oats. This was debated 50 or so years ago, maybe a little bit less. There was a professor, Yehuda Felix, who was also somewhat of a scholar in terms of his understanding of Torah as well. And he was a scientist, a botanist, and he felt that Shibol Shual, he had 3 sources in Chazal that seem to say whatever Chazal is referring to when they say Shibol Shual, that's not what oats look like. And because of that, there's a question of whether oats is mizonos or not. But we usually assume that oats are. You do make a mizonos, and oat matzah for people who are gluten-free, we do make hamotzian, but there are those, Rav Schechter actually being one of those, who took Yehuda Felix's assumptions, at least to be, if you can, to be matmir, and apparently Rav Schechter doesn't eat Cheerios without making hamotzi first, because it could be that oats aren't really one of the five meat. That's a parenthesis. Close parenthesis. So the origin. So where did we get to kitnios? So kitnios developed in around the 1300s. The first source is the smak. The smak is the Sefer Mitzvos Katan, one of the Rishonim, and he quotes that there is a minhag. I'll just read to you a line or two. He says, "Rabbeinu nohagim, they have a minhag iser shelo leochlam Pesach, not to have kitnios on Pesach." Okay, and he says, "V'lachei nira lekaim haminhag v'lasar ko kitnios v'Pesach," and not because it comes to chametz. Now, the Gemara is correct. The Rambam is correct. The kitnios cannot turn into chametz. You will not violate the Torah's prohibition of eating chametz. If you took kitnios, you ground them up, you turn them into a kitnios bagel, that will not be chametz. But there is a practice, we have to understand why, that the rabbis felt it would not be appropriate to eat the kitnios things either. So it's a minhag. So you have to talk about minhagim for a minute or two as well. So again, we have things that the Torah tells us you can't do. We have things that the rabbis interpreted the Torah or came to other gezeros, the rabbanon, that we should or should not do. Some things are positive. Megillah is derabanan. It's not in the Torah. But then there are minhagim. And again, there's also minhagim that depend on one's individual minhag. A person can take upon himself a practice. You have a minhag of a certain stringency, let's say. You keep Shabbos at a certain time, or you eat only Chal Yisrael. That's not the halacha per se. You don't have to keep those things. There are certain opinions that say that this is more appropriate, and that's your minhag to take it upon yourself. Then you have family minhagim, not just about the songs that you sing at the Seder, but there are also family minhagim that are more binding, that if this is what your family always did, a person should follow their family minhagim. If you grew up in Frankfurt, you should daven in a certain way. If you grew up in Egypt, you should daven a different way. Those are family minhagim. And then they're also what I already kind of went to, and I said Frankfurt, they're community minhagim. And each level above is a little bit stronger. But a minhag isn't just like a nice practice, and you do it if you want to, you don't do it if you don't want to. They're binding. The Shulchan Aruch considers a minhag as like a neder. It's on the level of a neder. And if you have a minhag and you want to break the minhag, you kind of have to do a taras nedarim. It's on that type of level. It's not just something that on a whim you either do it or don't do it. One of the most famous minhagim is the fact that we keep 2 days of Yom Tov outside of Israel. The Gemara says, you know, it's a minhag that was established for a certain reason because of the process of finding out when the days of Rosh Chodesh would be related to that. And even though today we have calendars, the Gemara says, you have to hold on to the minhagim, be careful with them, and you can't just leave them as a whim. So there was at a certain point in history where the rabbis felt that there to institute a practice, and it was accepted by a lot of people at that time. Now, to be honest, at that time there was also contention. Not everyone agreed to this minhag. The smak, who's the originator or the quoter of this minhag, was actually quoted in the Rabbeinu Peretz, which is in the smak, but the smak's father-in-law, Rabbi Chiel Miparis, he ate rice on Pesach. So even when things were starting, as like lots of practices, they don't take on right away, and there was a lot of contention, and even for hundreds of years there were people who debated it, whether it's a make sense or not to have the minhag. So before we get into who keeps the minhag, who doesn't, why did they institute the minhag? So on the sheets I have two reasons why they instituted the minhag of kitnios. One is that these items, if you took them, if you took rice, if you took certain types of beans, if you could make them into a product that looks very much like bread, you can make these products out of those kitnios things. And then a person who is not so knowledgeable, say, hey, this guy eating a bagel, And I'll make my own bagel out of wheat and out of spelt and out of barley, and then you have a problem people eating real chametz on Pesach. So that's one reason. Second reason, now you may say, so then how can you make the matzah bagels? Okay, so they're not as close, but it's a question you have to answer. Second reason is that when these kidneys grow, often they grow near the five grains. So it's very common that get mixed in a little bit of the wheat, a little bit of the spelt, a little bit of the barley, a little bit of those other things in the fields, and you will not know for sure that what you have is a pure kidneyos product, especially you know, when things weren't as, especially when the people producing these things have no reason to be careful. You're not Jewish, you have a farm out in somewhere, and you have to grow these rice and other things, and you don't care, again, unless there are allergies or other things, and FDA, there might be more reasons today why people would be careful. But back in the day, the rabbis instituted, they were finding lots of the crops of kidneys also had traces of wheat, and then that's real chametz, and chametz is also b'mashu, even a tiny little bit. So even if it's 99% kidneys, if you have a mixture with 1% of the chametz, that could cause a problem. So there are two reasons why they instituted the minhag of kidneys. One is because it will look like bread and people will come to eat bread with the five grains, or they actually have those grains in them. Now, depending on which of the two answers will make a big difference in terms of some of the more relevant today questions. So we're going to get back to those two reasons.
How about all those charcoal muffins?
Right. The potato starch.
Store.
Right, right.
And they all say charcoal.
Right.
And they look and taste just like cupcakes.
I don't want to say they taste.
My husband said they were delicious.
Right.
I did not eat it, but he said
right,
they were absolutely delicious.
Free,
and it
right.
has birkat shahakol
yeah,
on it.
Yes.
And there were hundreds of packages of these things in every
Let's see if by the end of this year we answer that question.
Okay.
By going through the sources. maybe you'll think of the answer at that point. Okay, right now it's a very strong question.
Yeah.
Okay. So the major crux where things kind of split ways in terms of the sources is when you get to the Shulchan Aruch. So again, if you're understanding the history of Halacha, so people were writing things, the Rishonim is basically the period of about 1000 to 1500. The Smak, the first source we quoted, is around 1300. People in the 1300s were debating about this 1400s, you know, seemed to be. In the 1500s, well, now that we have the codification of the Shulchan Aruch. Preceding the Shulchan Aruch is the Tur. So this halacha is quoted in the Tur. On the side of the page of the Tur is the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is the author of the Shulchan Aruch. In his commentaries on the Tur, so first I'll just tell you the Tur. The Tur says there are those who say not to use these kidneys products because he gives the reason of that it's mixed in with wheat. He says v'chumah yaseirahi zu v'lo nagukein. So even the Tur is already saying that not there are those who do it, but not everyone does it. Okay? Now, and the Beis Yosef quotes this, and he says, in very very succinct way, you have it in the bottom of the first page of the sources, he quotes all the things, and he says, V'les t'chash l'dvar malalu, there are no people who concern about themselves with these kidneys and make themselves crazy about the kidneys. Zulasi ha'ashkenazim. So the Beis Yosef says, again, at that point in history, we already have communities of Ashkenazim, communities of Sephardim. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who came from the Sephardi background, the Mutasfas, and is the authority in Sephardi Psak, says, none of my family and my friends are keeping any of this kidney stuff. We have our rice, we have our other things. Those Ashkenazim, they do not eat the kidneys. As I wrote in parentheses, you know, everything has a balance over here. You can't just accept the kulas of the Sephardim and not some of their chumras. Whether it be having a whole month of slichos, and I'm sure there are a bunch of other things that they do keep. Bishul akum is a huge problem for Sardim that we don't have. Even in the cooking of things. So we may get and not eat rice for a few days of the year, but they have a problem, you know, getting kosher rice in restaurants and things, or whatever. So that's... And then it's codified, I have quoted for you, in the Shulchan Aruch. Again, the Shulchan Aruch is written by Rabbi Yosef Karo. So he says... quoting heavily from the Rambam that kidneys is not chametz, and then on the third wide line, the Haggah is when the Ramah takes over, and he says there are those who do say it is a problem, and he says v'haminag ba'ashkenaz in our communities is lahachmir v'ein l'shanos, don't change the minag. Okay, So that's where basically where things have been at and were at from the time that it was codified in the Shulchan Aruch. Svardim are not concerned with kitnios. Ashkenazim have a minhag, it's a practice to be concerned with kitnios. But what's missing and what needs to be still figured out is what are kitnios? What's included in the minhag? What's included in the minhag? Okay? So
these things don't grow together. You don't get wheat and beans. Rice grows in places where wheat won't grow. Right. It's like in 3 feet of water.
So that's one reason.
Combined.
There are two reasons though. That's the second reason. That may not apply. There's some things that the way they grow will have one reason. Sometimes will have both reasons. Sometimes the other reason. In other words, the rice may not have the reason of growing together with the wheat, but it will have the. You could mistake in it to be like a bread product of wheat. So that reason does apply. And what's important is, and as we'll see in terms of the evolution of kitnios, is once something was established and a strong minhag and many people for many generations kept it, even if things may have changed today, it's not so simple just to turn back the clocks and say that it doesn't apply anymore. A strong minhag, even if some of the reasons, that's like kind of like the Yom Tov Sheni thing. Yom Tov Sheni, in theory, there are reasons why it shouldn't apply anymore, but since it was a strong minhag for generations, we still keep it. So again, most assume of the legume family, the bean family, the rice, corn, things related to that. What about coffee beans?
Yeah.
So bring me a proof. Bring me a proof.
They grow on trees.
So that's the scientific proof. What's the non?
Bean, but it's not a
what's the non-scientific proof that coffee must be kosher for Pesach? Yeah. And you go shopping before Pesach?
Yeah,
and you go to Key Food before Pesach?
You know all about coffee.
So what's the most famous Haggadah that we have on Pesach? The Maxwell House Haggadah.
Yeah.
Clearly, coffee beans are not a problem Pesach. Otherwise, what is Maxwell House producing a Haggadah for us for generations? I'm not sure which proof is stronger. But either way, coffee is not one of those.
Is a strong bean officially considered a bean?
I think that's our practice. Again, a lot of these things you have to go. I don't know.
Recently, the one in my community
said it's fine.
I cannot bring myself to eat it. And but he said string beans were not a issue because we call it a bean, like a coffee bean, but it's not a bean.
It's a fruit.
Yeah.
It grows on a bush. You pick it, and the stuff inside. If you open it up, if you plant it, that grows. That's a fruit.
Okay, so
it's got seeds. Well. Yeah,
that could be. I don't
know. Like a tomato.
I didn't see a discussion on string beans.
Yeah.
Well, you have to see what the practice. Let's get into the specifics after we get a little more background.
So.
Okay. Good. Now we're getting to that. So there's two approaches that are found in the postgame to figure out what now is included in this minhag of we weren't there in 1300. So what did they have in mind? So now we know why they did it, right? We have at least two reasons why they did it, but we have to get into their mind. So those posting that say anything that fits into one or two of those reasons that we quoted, in terms of either you can produce things that may look like bread products, look like chametz, or because they're mixed in, though that should still apply. That's one approach. In other words, you have to look at the two reasons, then it works. If not. Others say, no, only the items that were accepted that we had a minhag on are included in that minhag. Things, as you said, corn, new world items that they never had, they never dreamt of, that they never had a minhag on. So they didn't have a minhag. I have to institute a minhag now on something that they didn't have back then. So that should be fine. Okay, and that seems to be the approach. The second way, it seems to be the approach of Ramosha Feinstein. Ramosha was asked about peanuts. Are peanuts a problem on Pesach or not? Okay, that's on the back of the second page. Let me just see where I'm up to following along over here. So peanuts, they don't grow in the ground either. But it's similar to the bean or the legume family. So Rabbi Feinstein says the approach is that anything that they did not have a minhag, a tradition on, then we don't have to include it into the tradition of kinyos. He says, "V'lachein imanu b'davar l'mashim mifurash." Any only things that are explicit. shenagu, that we had a practice lasor. Vechein mashu yadua mefursam. Again, he's saying it has to be famously and explicitly understood to know to us that this was what they didn't eat. So you have to ask what the Bavizans did. If they did this and they didn't eat these things, then we should continue it. But if they didn't have a minag on corn, so in theory, one would say, or peanuts, vegam yishli tein tam, de din mashu nes or minag, ha'in de davar nes or bekivus kon. He says, also you have to understand, how does the minag work? This minag didn't, that's not like all the rabbis got together and they made a decree. He said it started as a practice. Elashin higuas ha'am, the rabbis got up and they gave their sermons, Yontif morning, and they said, there's this halakhic issue. We're going to accept upon because we're concerned of either the mixing or it's going to look like things. Or some people started making chametz because other people started making rice bread. We're going to accept this practice in our shul, in our community. So fine. And, however, things like the peanuts he's referring to, that they never made, they didn't get together and make a takana, and there's no minhag, then we don't have to say it's a problem. I tried to show you the opposite extreme, which is the Chayei Adam, who goes as so far as to say that even potatoes could be a problem. It grows in the ground, maybe with other things. Everyone, as far as I know, does not have that practice. I don't know what you'd have for Pesach if you didn't have potatoes. But he says you could turn potato into potato starch and potato flour, and you can make a potato bread. They make potato bread. So he said, so in those, logically, you know, the Chayyadam is the other reason. In other words, the Ramosha holds that anything they have a practice for, we have to keep the practice. Anything they didn't, so we don't have to. The Chayyadam is saying anything that fits into the reason why they had the practice, even if they didn't have these items, that's what they had a minagong, and we should extend it. I think I was told they say a joke that the Chayyadam is called the life of man. Once he came out with this understanding that you can't eat potatoes, they start calling him the death of man. Because you can't have potatoes on Pesach, there's nothing to eat. And if you look at the next source as well, even in later on, in the 1700s, 1800s, there are those that said this is not a green minhag. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden is the Yaivitz. He says, my father-in-law, the Chacham Tzvi, wasn't very much into this practice, and he says, anyone who can abolish it, I'd be very happy for it to do so. Get all the rabbis together. It's not a very good minhag. Because what happens is, and he quotes later on, he says, sometimes this is a case of a chumra that leads to a kula. You know, sometimes, again, you have to understand, this is not halacha per se from what the Chazal taught us in the Gemara. This is a practice that came about. And if because of this practice, people have nothing to eat on Yom Tov, and people, we're going to get to in a few seconds, you know, what if there's a famine? You know, what are the exceptions to kinyos? But if because people aren't eating kinyos, then they say, forget this, I'm not going to keep Pesach anymore, and I'm going to start eating pizza, so then you didn't gain anything. So there's always a check and balance whenever a person takes upon, this is a general point. When a person takes upon himself a chumrah or a minhag, that's not something they have to do. Sometimes when you go too extreme, it can lead to bad things as well. And then the next quote I think is also very, very well said, translation from what Rav Kook had to say. He was talking about something which we're not going to get the details of. You have kitnios, and then you have derivatives of kitnios, right? So when you have the oils. Mm-hmm. So that's a different level. We're not going to get to too much about that. But he says, in the truth, this way of my teachers, the wise and righteous men, I mean, that I merited to serve them. And he says, Zuchusu Yogan Elinu, their merit should protect us. He says, my teachers, in general, he's saying, we were not inclined to be stringent when there was room to be lenient, especially regarding matters that do not have a strong foundation in the words of the sages and in the Talmud. Sufficient that we not stray from that which we are accustomed to follow from our teachers and from the poskim. However, regarding matters that have not been decided, certainly one should be inclined to be lenient as praiseworthy. So, again, he's saying something, he's in the context of kitnios, but the general point is we have to be careful not to keep pushing back more and more if you can't eat because of this, you can't da 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 da, because then it's going to really push people away. And the practice is that if it's not prohibited, then why prohibit something that's not prohibited? Now we can begin our discussion. Relating to quinoa. So based on what we know already, yes.
You said you weren't going to talk about the oil, but mm-hmm. I want to know about peanut oil. Jews have been eating it, having it since since the beginning when we came to this country. I mean, it's a minhag to eat it.
On Pesach? You're asking me to say
peanut oil.
Okay. There's peanut oil, I think, is one of those things. Peanuts also. A lot of these things are still up for debate. That's my understanding.
There's no other oil in the old days.
That's all we. What are the options? But now we have other options.
Now we have cottonseed oil. Right. You don't have that.
Right.
Kill you.
Vegetable oil.
Yeah. I'm not going to paskin about peanut oil. But based on what we saw, definitely Rav Moshe says peanuts are fine. Peanut oil should be fine. So based on what we saw already, so let's hear what your thoughts are in terms of quinoa. So should quinoa be a problem or not? I mean, you can begin to answer some of your questions also in terms of your shahakal cookies. So what do we have to say?
Well, they needed to understand what quinoa is. There's a whole thing. We have wheat berry now, quinoa, farro. These are all grains that we really don't know the source. You know, but they're relatively new into the market. Like,
right.
I know farro is considered
not
a wheat.
Grains.
Well, farro is
berries,
considered a wheat.
Well, there are different strains of quinoa.
No, so just you have to find out what this thing actually
right.
is.
Right. So that's number one. That's So there are a few things you have to do. First of all, you have to go out to the fields, and that's what the OU did, and the Star K did. Anyone who gives a hatcher on these things, they went out to the fields. So where are the fields? So quinoa is a South American product, primarily in Peru, the Incas. It's been there forever. We just didn't know about it. And now it's taken off, and they're doing all these fancy things with it. But that's the first thing. First thing, you have to go out and see what's the mitzias, what's going on in the fields. And then you also have to figure out the institution of quinoa. Is it that anything that looks like quinoa, smells like quinoa, and can be confused to be something like a quinoa thing, will be included in that gezeira, in that minhag, or they didn't know about quinoa. They probably couldn't pronounce it.
Buckwheat.
What?
Buckwheat is not considered a wheat product. It's considered a vegetable or a berry.
I wouldn't go by the name.
Well, we don't eat that on Pesach.
What about wild rice?
That's what quinoa is.
Wild rice
buckwheat.
Is grass.
Right, I can't go get through.
It's not rice.
Because we call it rice.
Right. The same thing
rice.
With the buckwheat, probably. Yeah, you have to. It's, you know, someone has to. I'm just giving a background of how one would approach the questions. I'm not going to get to the specifics. Except for quinoa, I have more specifics. But there are a lot of items. But that's the process that the rabbi and the Rav Machshir has to go through. Is first of all, he has to decide what camp are you on in terms of Rav Moshe or others in terms of. You just, and as Rav Moshe's approach is pretty succinct and simple in that if they never heard of these things and never saw these things, they never had a minhag in Europe on these things. So the Ashkenazim never did it in Europe. When the Ramah says this is our minhag, you should keep it, he wasn't referring to those things, and it's totally fine. So that's the simplest way to approach these things. If that's a person's tradition of psak, we have to have a tradition there as well, that makes things fairly simple. So quinoa is not a question according to that line of thought, because they didn't have quinoa, and they never made a gezeira, they never made a minhag on quinoa.
We're asking if this is kosher for Pesach, or if this
Pesach.
Is kidniot.
Same thing, we don't eat kidniots. Ashkenazim.
No, I mean, Sfarim would eat it. If it's
Sfarim, of course, Sfarim's not a question.
They can eat quinoa, no question.
Not a question, no question.
So
we're talking about those who have the minhag
right.
to not eat kidneys, where is quinoa on the fence?
Right.
Right, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
So, but what's interesting, if you look at the OU article, they wanted to go beyond that. They didn't just want to say, oh, they never heard of quinoa, quinoa's not a problem. They wanted to say, even if had they heard of quinoa, it doesn't really fit the other reasons as well. Because they, as you can see here, they went to the fields, and they had to make sure sufficiently that nothing got mixed up, and they traveled to Peru and these other places. But at this point, there is supervision, as opposed to I think a few years ago where everyone was just like, I don't know, like what's the deal with quinoa. I think like 5 years ago or something.
Right.
It was just like
and it was
a lot of
back and forth.
Yeah,
back and forth.
Yeah. If you look at older versions of articles written in quinoa, a lot of them were just like, we're not sure, guys. You know, maybe it is, maybe it's not. But now this is current that what the OU is saying, and the Star K on their website has a similar thing. Is that no? We spent the time, we sent people out there, we've done the research, and we feel comfortable. Again, I think that again, they're not saying you can go to a store on 181st Street and buy quinoa. They're saying is we are producing, right, we can certify that which we know about. Because again, you still have the problem is, if you have no certification on the quinoa, you don't know if anything was mixed in. At some point in the process, they could be producing lots of things there. That's probably the main concern, is that just the unknown. Unless you hold hold quinoa is not a problem.
Tapioca, what is that? What is tapioca?
It's also it's a starch that people with celiac can use.
They where does it come from? Where does it grow?
I don't know. I just know that the things that a celiac person right. can use.
All right, all the celiac products.
I think we should get all these gluten free people. Yeah. And have them eat it, and if they get a reaction,
tapioca is fine.
No, but still,
they
still
love it. They go around. It's a gluten-free holiday. They're so excited. This woman is Jewish. In the supermarket, she says to me, "You know, I can't eat any of this stuff."
So you can buy all the kugels.
I see all this stuff they're having for Passover here. I'm so excited! I can eat all these cookies and
no, but then anything on the breasts.
Right.
And there's a ton of it now,
it's
and every year
holiday.
There's more and
they
more.
Love it.
But after Yantif, there's bakeries in Brooklyn that after Yantif, people really buy out whatever's left.
Right.
These non-gebrutz bakeries.
Okay.
That. People,
so let's just.
So what's the story with the muffins?
Yeah.
So
they
the story,
look and taste just like muffins.
They look and taste like muffins. Again, if you take Ramosha's approach, then it's for sure not a problem because they never had any minhag on those types of potato starch things to not eat them. In other words,
right.
when the minhag was started, they never had that minhag to not eat those things.
But the other reason is it's like
it looks like it.
So that
may still apply. I don't know of anyone who goes as far as to say you can't eat a Pesach dick of bagel other than saying it's like it doesn't taste good.
Corn is
a good question.
They have shahakol ones. Noam Gourmet puts
bagels?
Out a line of bagels.
Oh. Because
okay.
People are eating
so
them, I mean,
I just want to run through the last few things
donuts,
here.
They have everything.
The begin because kitnios, it's important to keep in mind for the last part of the shiur here. Remember, kitnios is not something that the Gemara says is a problem. It's a minhag. So something that's a minhag, you have more room to be lenient. So therefore, medications. This is already brought down in the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah. Medications that may have kidneys, which a lot of them do.
Babies.
So a lot of medications. Yeah, if a person needs it, again, it's not chametz. You don't have to sell it. If you have kidneys and you don't have to sell it. It's not chametz. It's just that we don't use it. You're even allowed to have hanaf. You're allowed to have pleasure. You're allowed to take the kidneys and burn them off as fire and warm yourself with it. It's just you can't eat it and produce it and on Pesach. So medications, there's room to be mako. In the time of need, it's brought down in the Chayei Adam that there was a famine in 1771. So I was on Wikipedia last night, so I put in the word famine 1771. So I got this. There actually really was. There really was a famine, and people knew about it. And the next recorded famine, the Czech lands, was the Great Famine. Look, this is unbelievable. Read this. Which lasted from 1770 until 1771. That's exactly when the Chayei Adam was writing. Okay, he was writing about the cause of the Great Famine was a disease of grain monoculture and heavy rains. The Great Famine killed 12% of Czech land, by the way, up to 500,000 inhabitants. Unbelievable, right? Fine. So, but look what happened over here. The famine ended when the Czech lands imported and began producing potatoes. In other words, the famine, that's exactly the point. The famine got rid of all the wheat. They got rid of all the kidneys. They had nothing to eat. All the rice. It was all gone. So at that time, the rabbi's guy came up and said, you can eat the kidneys this year, guys. It's okay. Because it's just a minhag. People are dying. Okay? The famine was caused by potatoes, blah, blah, blah. Okay? So that's another thing. You don't have to sell it. It's also for young children. We don't have to be as machmir when it comes to these things. And I'll leave you with a few other small little points, which are, I didn't have time to fully research, but then again, you have the derivatives, you have the oils, there's a fascinating tshuva that some hold, and I think a lot don't hold. Again, this was a bigger issue a number of years ago in Israel. They started producing products in Israel with kitnios, and it said kosher for Pesach, but people didn't realize that it was kosher for Pesach for Sephardim, right, for Sephardim, not for Ashkenazim. But then there was some Ashkenazi poskim that said it's even fine for Ashkenazim if it's Sephardi did it, because they were mevatel the kitnios and everything else, and for the person who did it, it's kosher. Even if for you it's not, there's a whole question, halakhic question, whether it's true. But there are those who say if a Sephardi did it, an Ashkenazi can eat it also. But leave that aside. Marriage, in terms of marrying someone who's Sephardi, usually we say that you take on the minhagim of those of the husband. So if a person even grew up with the minhag of eating kitnios, if they married someone who's Ashkenaz, then they do not eat kitnios, and vice versa. If a person always was never ate kitnios, and now they married a Sephardi, they can now eat kitnios, and you don't even, the post is that you don't even have to make a taras nedar. And then the last thing, which is also very relevant, is about eating out on Pesach. Let's say you live in Great Neck. Let's say, and in Great Neck there are a lot of Ashkenazim and a lot of Sephardim, and your neighbors invite your Sephardim invite you over for lunch on Pesach. Why not? They eat kitnios. You don't eat kitnios. So of course they're not going to bring out the rice at the meal. They know that much. But what about the pots? What about all these other things that they've been, the whole yontif they've been using kitnios? You don't need kitnios. So the post can talk about this. Well, some say it's totally fine. I think Rabbi Vadya has a tshuva, if I'm correct. He said it's totally fine for Ashkenazim to eat by the Sephardi. But I heard in the name of Rav Shechter that maybe one should refrain from that, because then again it gets into the halachic category of in the vavlin is or the chatchila. There is something wrong here, but you're just kind of overriding it by all the cooking and things of that sort. And unless it's necessary, maybe it should be avoided. But again, that's something that's a little bit up for debate still. But something to keep in mind, Ashkenazim and Sephardim eating meals, it's more, the Sephardi can come to the Ashkenazim whenever he wants. He may not be happy with the meal. I mean, he can come to the Sephardi whenever he wants. But an Ashkenaz coming to the Sephardi is a little more of a question to discuss.